Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 13, and it should be text 19. Yep. Whoops. Actually, I've got text 19, but I'm not seeing the same Sanskrit. You're in chapter 10 there. Huh? He's in the wrong chapter. He's in the wrong chapter. Chapter 10. Huh? Yeah. You scared me there. Don't scare me. No. Well, you're getting closer. Actually, no, not even. It's now, it's 18 now. We need 13. 13? Okay. Oh. Well, that's my eyesight then. Sorry, thank you. Okay. Prakriti anayasyeha. Pratikriya anayasyeha. Kutaschit kadhichit prabhu. Kutaschit kadhichit prabhu. Saisha Bhagavan Kala. Saisha Bhagavan Kala. Sarvesham na samagata. Sarvesham na samagata. Pratikriya nayasyeha. Kutas chit kadhi chit prabho. Saisha Bhagavan Kala. Sarvesham na samagata. Others, please. Patikriya nayasya. Vaishnavis.
Prabhu.
Pratikriya, remedial measure. Na, there is none. Yasya, of which. Iha, in this material world. Kutaschit, by any means. Karichit, or by anyone. Prabho, O my Lord. Sa, that. Esa, positively. Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Kala, eternal time. Sarvesham, of all. Na, of us. Samagata, arrived. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is Vidura speaking. This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in this material world. My Lord, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal time, Kala, that has approached us all. And that was Vidura speaking to Dhritarashtra. So Srila Prabhupada's purport. There is no superior power which can check the cruel hands of death. No one wants to die, however acute the source of bodily sufferings may be. Even in the days of so-called scientific advancement of knowledge, there is no remedial measure either for old age or for death. Old age is the notice of the arrival of death served by cruel time, and no one can refuse to accept either summon calls or the supreme judgment of eternal time. This is explained before Dhritarashtra, because he might ask Vidura to find out some remedial measure for the imminent fearful situation, as he had ordered many times before. Before ordering, however, Vidura informed Dhritarashtra that there was no remedial measure by anyone or from any source in this material world. And because there is no such thing in the material world, death is identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As it is said by the Lord Himself in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, text 34. Death cannot be checked by anyone or from any source within this material world. Hiranyakasipu wanted to be immortal and underwent a severe type of penance by which the whole universe trembled, and Brahma himself approached him to dissuade Hiranyakasipu from such a severe type of penance. Hiranyakasipu asked Brahma to award him the blessings of immortality, but Brahma said he himself was subject to death, even in the topmost planet. So how could he award him the benediction of immortality? So there is death even in the topmost planet of this universe, and what to speak of other planets, which are far, far inferior in quality to Brahmaloka, the residing planet of Brahma. Wherever there is the influence of eternal time, there is this set of tribulations, namely birth, disease, old age, and death, and all of them are invincible. Omaginata Medanda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militamiana Tasma Shigurdavena Maha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitamiana Bhutale Swayam Bhupagaramayam Dirati Swaparantikam. Yeah. So we hear about this a lot. You know, this is not the one and only place in the Bhagavatam or the one and only purport where Prabhupada talks about this, the inevitability of death, the unavoidability of the tribulations of birth, disease, old age, and death. And, there's a reason why there's a few reasons. or at least a couple, why we hear about this so repeatedly throughout the pages of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because one is because it's very important information. It's very important for us to be aware of these points, the inevitability of death and the unavoidability of these tribulations. And also, following on from that reason, is that we tend to forget. You know, we tend to forget. We tend, even something's extremely important, and our nature is to forget. You know, we forget so many different things, and even very important things like this. An example of that from my own experience is about the forgetful nature of the living entity. This is like a really vivid example. Is if you take a bottle of Coca-Cola, let's just use Coca-Cola for example, because it's about, you know, 50% sugar. Okay, and you pour it on the ground outside someplace. You don't have to wait really that long. Within a reasonably short period of time, there'll be a lot of ants, like anything. There'll be hundreds, depending upon where you pour it. Maybe thousands of ants will just, you know, come. Because here's, you know, it's a Sunday feast for them, right? But if you come along then, you know, when they're all there, chowing down, and you come with like a rock or something, some solid object, and you bang it on the ground, not killing it, don't kill any ants, but just bang it on the ground, you know, right near where they're feasting, so to speak, and they'll all disperse. You know, they'll very rapidly disperse. Okay? How long do you think it'll take before they come back? Do you think they'll wait, like, you know, because that's pretty, and you're coming with a solid object, and you're banging it. Even if, say, a non-devotee were to kill some of them while he was doing that, okay, how long do you think it would be before they come back? Because, you know, they should be aware that that's a very dangerous situation for them, right? Some of their fellow ants got killed, and, you know, maybe if they go back there, they're going to get killed. So do you think they'll wait like a couple days before they come back to get the rest of that Coca-Cola? Or do you think, huh? Yeah, in minutes. I've seen it in seconds, within a minute. But that fast, they'll disperse, and within like a minute or two's time, they'll have forgotten, you know, they'll have forgotten that, oh, all these ants just got killed here, and maybe the same thing's going to happen to us. But anyway, whatever. Hare Krishna, you know, if they're very enlightened ants. And they're back, you know, and they're going for the Coca-Cola again. So, you know, you say, well, that's just ants. Well, it's not just ants. It's you know, all living entities who are conditioned by the three modes of material nature. Our nature is to be forgetful. I've heard Prabhupada make this point, you know, in lectures he's given. He even refers to it in that famous verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna asks Arjuna, how come? No, Arjuna asks Krishna, you know, Krishna, the sun god, he's like, way before you, and you're saying you spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god, but the sun god, he, you know, by birth, he's like millions and millions of years senior to you. How can I understand that you spoke the Bhagavad Gita to the sun god? And then Krishna tells him, well, actually, Arjuna, you know, many, many births both you and I have had, you know, but I can remember all of them. I can remember all of my, not births, but appearances where you can't. And, you know, Arjuna was also a very special, not just an ordinary living entity, but and the Prabhupada and the Purport goes on to explain that's the nature of a conditioned soul. They tend to forget, you know. So this is a bona fide point, and it's supported by a very nice pastime, and I'm going to give it a hint. Okay, that pastime is found in the Mahabharata. There's a statement that supports this point. And I'd like to see if any devotee here who's not a Prabhupada disciple knows that pastime where that this point is being made. There's a statement from a very authoritative person. Huh? Well, you're a Prabhupada disciple, so you don't count. Oh. No, I'm after a statement that supports this point, that despite the fact that the living entities should have ample experience that death is happening all around them, that they tend to just kind of forget it, and, you know, it's just non-Prabhupada disciple. Okay, well, David Rata, he's got his hand up most confidently. Let's see if he knows. What am I referring to? It's from the Mahabharata. That's a good hint. Yeah, you got it. Give that devotee a gulab. You got it. That's right. And Archita knows the Sanskrit. Right, what's the exact translation? Right. So, yeah, despite the fact that it's happening all around us and to the people that we know in many different ways, and somehow or another, it wears off. This is expression smarsan vairagya. It's referring to how, when people at a funeral, at a crematorium, when the body's actually being burned, they get it kind of impacts them, and they think, this, I got to get serious about whatever, some my material life or my spiritual life or whatever, because they get that understanding that life is temporary. But then when they go away, and then it just wears off, and they just business as usual like that. But we have to remind ourselves that we're not exempt. We're not exempt from, this happening to us or people around us. And even devotees do leave their body. A few weeks ago, maybe it was a month or so ago, we had quite a few devotees pass away back about a month or so ago. And I was going, wow. It's like every day it seems like we're making another announcement of another devotee passing away. So I actually made a list of devotees that I knew that passed away, and it actually came to about 150, so I thought, whoa, I was pretty astounded by that. Actually, I'll read the list. And when I was thinking about this, I think, how in the material world they say, may so-and-so rest in peace, but we don't think like that. We think, may they serve in bliss. That's our understanding. If the karmis might think, may that person rest in peace as opposed to rest in turmoil or turbulence, but our understanding is no. That's not the best we can wish upon somebody. We can wish, may they serve in bliss, because we believe that that person's going on, and hopefully they're going on to, be rejoined Prabhupada and Krishna and like that, and continue on. So anyway, this was the list that this is just devotees I knew, that I personally knew. And I'll read it because it's kind of like, it's a sobering, I'm reading this in a serious mood here and in a respectful mood, because it's a sobering type of experience to be reminded of, people that we knew that passed away. Because at least myself, I notice that I don't like it, but it's not something I do deliberately, but just like the ants, within a very short time, even people who, that you knew really well and that were really important to you, and you just tend to, forget all about them. When I was making this list, it didn't all happen in one go, and after a few days, I'd remember another few people, and I go, my God, how could I have forgotten that person? That was somebody I knew really well, and you just forgot about their whole existence. So I was really kind of like, wow, this is like amazing. This particular potency of Maya is amazing, that how much you can just kind of like put the whole thing out of your mind. But anyway, here goes. Here is the list of devotees, as I said. Jayananda, Tamal Krishna, Vishnu John, Madhuvisa, Brahmananda, Gargamuni. I'm just saying the name. This is how I wrote it. It's all Prabhus and like that. Yamuna, Paladna Sringa, Dwarkadish, Jai Rishi, Shamasunda, Gaurabhavana. Actually, I'm not going to read the whole list. It's too, it's a long list. And so the point being that devotees too We're not exempt. You know, we're not exempt from passing away. We will also pass away. So we have to be ready. You know, we have to be preparing ourselves all the time. And that's the message that we're, you know, repeatedly getting from Prabhupada, from the scriptures, prepare ourselves. And so, of course, you know, a very important part of that preparation is our sadhana bhakti. Because sadhana is sadhana for what? It's always remember Krishna and never forget him. We're practicing to be able to come to that stage where we always remember Krishna and never forget him. And sadhana bhakti is as a means to that end. So on that particular point that I was reading this canto of the Bhagavatam earlier in the week, and I came across a purport where Prabhupada made a very good point about the quality that the sadhana bhakti needs to have in order for it to be effective, in order for it to actually progress to where we're able to always remember Krishna and never forget him. So Prabhupada, and this is from First Canto, Chapter 7, Text 6, I believe, in the purport, Prabhupada says, wrong place. Revival of the dormant affection or love of God does not depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting, but it solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. When the Lord is fully satisfied with the sincere efforts of the devotee, he may endow him with his transcendental loving service. So that's, I thought that was a super important point, at least for me, to always keep in mind. You know, Prabhupada's saying here that, I'm going to go over it point by point. Revival of the dormant affection or love of God, which is, of course, that's the goal, that's what we want. So Prabhupada's saying it doesn't depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting. And actually, as the sentence progresses, you could even take it as far as to say it doesn't even depend on the system of hearing and chanting, which means because Prabhupada says it solely and wholly depends on the causeless mercy of the Lord. That's the system of chanting, hearing and chanting is the recommended process to get that mercy, but ultimately it's not even dependent upon that. In other words, Krishna's not obligated. Krishna's not obligated to give anybody dormant, you know, love of God. That's the recommended approach, and it's certainly not dependent on the mechanical system. It means doing it without the proper understanding and the proper feeling. Right? So, goes probably, when the Lord is fully satisfied with the sincere efforts of the devotee, he may endow him with his loving transcendental service. So once again, the point being, this is the preparation. We have to, the obvious point that it's being made here is that sincerity is the key factor. But when the Lord is fully satisfied with the sincere efforts of the devotee, the Prabhupada says, then he may, doesn't have to, once again, Krishna doesn't have to anything, but he may endow him, the devotee, with loving transcendental service. So that's the most important preparation. You know, the most important item in our preparation that we always try to be sincere about the basic things that Prabhupada has instructed us to do. And if we are, then Krishna may endow us with transcendental loving service, and we'll be able to always remember him, always forget him, and never forget him, and at the end of this lifetime, get out of this material world, which is the goal. You know, to get out of the cycle of birth and death, go back to Godhead. So, something to try to remember. And can somebody see the clock? Just give me an idea what to... Okay, I can go a little bit longer. And this is the goal. And as I'm progressing in Krishna consciousness, I'm feeling more and more confident that I did the right thing. That I did the right thing with my life, and I'm doing the right thing to my life. And I'll give an example, okay, why I'm saying that. So back, you know, a while ago, I was watching some video on YouTube. It's just like a little hobby of mine. So I like to check out every now and again the work of these different scientists who do research in psychic phenomena, children remember their past lives and near-death out-of-body experiences and stuff like that. So I was watching a panel because it supports our philosophy. It's not, you know, doesn't prove it, but it's consistent with the same philosophical conclusions you'll find throughout the Vedic literatures that, you know, we're something more than this, we're conscious. In essence, we're consciousness. We're not this material body, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, so on one of these videos, this one particular person who was speaking was saying how, yeah, we're coming to the conclusion that's very similar to the territory occupied by the world's traditional religions. And I heard him say that, and I also read a little something on the internet where he said the same thing. So I actually sent him an email, and I said, I said, you know, I watched your video, and I read this article that you wrote, and you were saying how the conclusion you're coming to about reality, because that's what he was talking about, the ultimate, what is the nature of reality, is something similar to the world's traditional, actually he said institutional religions. I said to my way of thinking, I said, you know, when I hear that, that makes me think, were you talking about God, his nature, and our relationship with him? And I said, this is an email I sent him. I said, am I barking up the right tree? And he said, yep. He sent me a one-word email as an answer. Yep. Which was better than nothing. And then I sent him back an email asking if he'd like to speak at a, you know, like something the equivalent of a BI conference or something like that, because, you know, they do that. They recently asked this fellow Stuart Hameroff to speak, et cetera, you know. So, but then anyway, he said, gave a reason why that wasn't such a good thing for him. He had to focus on his research and his writing. But then, so then I wrote him back an email. With that email, he sent me. He sent me two excerpts from an article he wrote in a magazine and something he'd written, like a 2.5-page synopsis of his understanding of what is the big picture. And in that, I read, he said, you know, getting right to it, ultimately what they believe, the conclusion they were coming to is that the ultimate picture is that something similar to pantheism, whereas that there's a big consciousness, or God, you know, pervading everything, within everything, and pervading everything, with something left over for theism, for a personal God. And I thought, whoa, that's pretty far out. Because, I mean, that's not what we think. It's not identical with us, of course, but I said, geez, that's pretty darn close for like a speculating, you know, per person like that. So I wrote him back saying, wow, that's interesting. I said a friend of mine wrote a book which deals with a lot of the same subject matter that you're investigating, and he comes and his conclusion is not, what's the word I use? I said, it's not contradicting. You know, that's not the same, obviously, but it's not, you know, it's in some ways it's similar because we also accept that there is a big consciousness pervading everything. And of course, his idea was that the personality, you know, the something left over for a personal God is something subordinate to that big consciousness, whereas we'd have it the other way around. Brahman ohi pratishtaham. Krishna says, I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman. But putting that aside for the time being, you know. So I wrote him back saying, hey, a friend of mine wrote a book, Judah Karma, is what I was referring to, wrote a book where he researches some of the same phenomena that you've been dealing with, and he comes to some similar conclusions. Would you be interested to read it? And he wrote me back, much to my surprise. He wrote me back, and he said, yeah. So we're going to send them a copy of Judah Karma's book, Human Devolution, and see what happens. Hopefully he'll like it and he'll respond. So my point in mentioning that is this, that here are these people, they're educated. This guy's got a list of credentials as long as your arm. You know, Harvard this, Princeton this, Yale that, you know, this fellowship, doctorate, blah, 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 you know. And, you know, so these are educated people. They're intelligent and material, you know, perspective, and they have no particular sympathy or leaning towards religion. Matter of fact, they tend to be you know, the opposite, because in one of his articles he used the expression the overbelief of religions. They tend to think that religions kind of, you know, they just take too, they go too far. You know, they just they'll believe too many far out things just on faith, whereas they like to consider themselves very, you know, objective and fact based. So, but my point is that people who are thinking like that, and they're coming to the, and, you know, they're, what they're doing is they're just sitting down and saying, okay, what's the deal here? Let's survey everything that people are experiencing, you know, everything that's happening, and what is it that we feel is really going on here? And they're not coming to the conclusion. These are, as I said, once again, super intelligent by material standards guys. They're not coming to the conclusion that matter is the ultimate basis of reality. No. They're rejecting that. Quite the contrary. They're coming to the conclusion that consciousness is the ultimate basis of reality. You see? They're, you know, they're getting at a consciousness-based worldview, which is like just a hop, skip, and a jump away. It's, you know, they're impersonalists, no doubt, at this point. But they're a hop, skip, and a jump away if they're not offensive to Krishna consciousness. So I thought, wow, that's pretty far out. And it made me feel, it just makes me feel more confident that, yeah, Prabhupada knew what he was talking about. You know, Prabhupada reminds me of, like, pardon the analogy, Mike Tyson. He was famous for coming out of the corner. You know, as soon as the bell rang, Mike Tyson, he'd come out of the corner. Boom, 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 boom. He just kind of like, you know, no finesse, nothing. He just kind of like try to overwhelm his. Prabhupada, in one sense, was like that. He came out of the corner. You know, he arrived here in America and didn't pull his punches. You know, he right away he was saying to people, you're not the body. You know, you're spirit, soul. I mean, this was like, that was super controversial thing to say to, you know, if for somebody who's trying to win an audience over in 1965 and 66 and 67, et cetera, et cetera. But Papa wasn't, he, you know, he didn't care. That's the truth. And he said it. That was very bold. To preach like that at that time or at any time throughout the course of the, because it's just something that is not popular in the material world. And I was thinking yesterday as we were driving back from Sankirtan, I was thinking, because we go to colleges and we distribute books, and there's so many colleges throughout the greater Los Angeles area. And I was, it was about 3:30, so I was thinking, yeah, right, at the same time as all these schools are, you know, giving these, all these different courses, teaching this, that, and the other thing, Amala Bhakta Swami is sitting here in our temple room, and he is, you know, giving a class to the bhaktas on the nectar of instruction, which is talking about this very same thing. We're not this body with spirit, souls, we're eternal servants of Krishna. And I was thinking, wow, you know, in this whole big city of 10 million plus people, there's only, you know, there's hundreds and thousands of classes going on around about any, you know, so many different material subject matters, and there's one class going on about, you know, this philosophy. So, in other words, it's, anyway, so getting back to the point that, it just makes me feel more confident to know that, you know, even these people who are very intelligent and qualified in terms of, you know, science and, you know, all this different type of thing, and they're moving towards a conclusion that's much more similar to our conclusion than the conclusion of the gross materialists. Okay? I mean, I'll give you another example of this that just kind of on this point of how my interactions, another interaction in the world that's made me feel a bit more confident about Krishna consciousness. It's a couple of weeks ago, as you probably all remember, we were visited by the Jesuits, led by Francis Clooney. So, in preparation, because I gave the class that morning, and in preparation for that, I wanted to know, get some information about him. So I went on the internet, and I read his bio and everything like that. And there was one thing in the bio where it said, there was some statement about, he wrote something, a paper about the dialogue between the early Jesuits and the Brahmins in India about reincarnation. Okay? So I saw that and I thought, okay, this sounds like something good that I could talk about during the talk. And so I sent an email to him, and but I didn't get an answer from him. I got an answer from his secretary saying that he was, you know, on the road and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, when he came here, you know, he he said, I saw that email, and actually said, I don't think you're probably going to be disappointed in the article, because what it was, it just, he said, that interaction was nothing very enlightening. It was basically, what it was the Jesuits wanted to argue with the Brahmins, you know, and defeat them, you know, and prove to them by argument why it's not a good conclusion. It's, you know. So anyway, that was, so I said, well, I said, that's interesting. And I said, you know, I said, then he mentioned to me, he said, you know, but there are parts in the Bible, because he's a very open-minded person, you know, he's a very easy, nice guy. So he said, but, you know, he said, there are parts in the Bible which are kind of ambiguous and which a lot of people interpret as giving, you know, scope for that, you know, possibility of reincarnation. And he said, I'm not, you know, it's not something I've, I can't remember what he said about that. And I said, okay, but I said, so how do they, you know, how do people in your line feel about that? And he said, well, there's mixed opinions. And anyway, somehow I brought up the point of children who remember past lives and that type of thing. And he said, yeah, he was aware of it. I said, what about, you know, empiric evidence that shows that maybe, you know, reincarnation is something that happens? And he was aware of that. And he said to me, I'm going to check it out. He said, I think somebody in my position should be aware of this. You know, so I told him where to look and everything. And he said he was going to watch a video or two and study up on it. So once again, the point being that, you know, like Prabhupada made this point, said, I'm not a scientist, but I could defeat so many scientists. Why? Because I know what the Bhagavatam is saying. You know, I'm parampara. So Prabhupada would just go with parampara, and even he's coming in contact with scientists, and he felt like he would come out victorious because without being a trained scientist, because he stuck with parampara. So in the same way, I'm finding in different, as you know, time goes on in different interactions that what Prabhupada has given us, parampara, is seemed to be emerging victorious. You know, I mean, this, in the scientific community, they're moving more towards a consciousness-based worldview. This Francis Clooney is a well-recognized, renowned scholar in the Christian community, and you know, here he's prepared to accept. Well, okay, maybe I should investigate this. So, you know, I'm not feeling embarrassed by presenting this knowledge when I actually make that effort to step out and take the risk, and you know, I'm feeling encouraged that, yeah, wait a second, we got something pretty solid here, and you know, people are kind of coming more into line with appreciating it as opposed to showing how it's something that's really not worth further serious consideration. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Okay. Thank you much. Gantarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
I'm just pointing out something. Yeah. You should eat your